no real timeline. We're going through the process right now. You know, we're really excited about the people we've gotten to talk to and we will get to talk to. And so it's not necessarily about timeline. We want to get this right. And we want to make sure we have all the information to get it right. And that's kind of what we're going through right now.
Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio 670, The Score. We are delighted to welcome in Frank Saravelli with the Chicago Sports Network. He joins us now on Aturo Tire Hotline. Aturo, your hometown tire, aturo.com. Frank does so many things, but also helps out at CHSN, and he helps us out too. Frank, good morning. How are you?
Pretty good. How are you guys doing?
Doing well.
You know, we're kind of taking this one in and trying to understand exactly what's happening here with the Blackhawks. Jeff Blashill is named their new coach, and he will be introduced on Tuesday. And I'm very interested to hear what he has to say. And I don't mean to be less than enthusiastic or less enthusiastic than I should be, but you know that David Carl, they talked to him. There are a lot of guys that were available. And part of the reason a lot of guys are available is because the NHL goes through a lot of coaches. And the Blackhawks certainly went through a couple. So you just don't know how excited to get and how worked up to be. And that is probably very unfair to Frank Blashill.
Well, it probably is. And here's the thing I would say is that this goes for any of the top guys that have been hired through this cycle as well. Any coach is only as good as his players. So to think that Jeff Blashill is going to come in and be a miracle worker, I think, is probably an unfair or unrealistic expectation. The Hawks have a lot of work to do. I think Kyle Davidson is well aware of what's in front of him. They took an important step in the last month of the season in injecting the young players that they added from the completion of their college careers. And now let's see what they fill out the rest of the group with this summer to begin taking that step. So Jeff Blashill, I think, is a quality coach. I think you and I, I'm a lot better in over 15 years doing this. Each year, each couple years, you add different things to your arsenal. You learn. And I think that's the big thing that stands out about Jeff Blashill. He's had an opportunity to learn. I think almost every coach, if they get a second crack at it, is better the second time around.
So when you talk about when they introduce him Tuesday, the first question or among the first questions will be, Frank, how will you help Connor Bedard reach his potential? How do you think he will answer that question, and what can he do?
I think he's going to have to be someone that is incredibly positive and enthusiastic with Bedard. And I'll take it back to the first part of my answer when talking about a coach is only as good as the players that he inherits. Is Connor Bedard is only going to be as good as Connor Bedard allows himself to be. And that is from a physical and mental perspective. I think this, and I've mentioned it before, I think this is a massive summer. I think he needed, and is a good reason why he didn't go to the World Championship in Sweden to play for Team Canada, is he needs a full-on mental reset. He needs to take time and put his hockey bag away for 2 or 3 weeks and just work out. And the other part of it is, I think he has to figure out other elements of his game in order to get better. And so both those things go hand in hand, right? He's completely committed. This guy is so hungry to win. I think that passion and fire burns at an incredibly hot temperature. And it's so much so that I think he also gets in his own way. And so if he can come into camp with an open mind and a clear mind at that, that I think these two are going to meet and find a way to get on the same page that it's going to be really beneficial for both Bedard, the Blackhawks, and Blashill.
Yeah, you know, it would seem that when you hire a Jeff Blashill, the thing you got to ask him is, hey, we got this guy, this young player here who is the centerpiece of the organization. He's meant to be a generational talent, and we're and he took a step back. He took a, from the first year to the next year, it wasn't great. And when we talked to you about it before, Frank, you mentioned he's got to score more goals. He's got to use that shot. Mm-hmm. You know, I would hope that they've had all these conversations already with Jeff Blashill, and that they feel he is a guy that can work with Bedard, because if this doesn't work, that sends the whole rebuild stumbling back, another few years, for God's sake.
Well, maybe not. I think the other part of Jeff Blashill's job is going to be to try and take the pressure off of Bedard. Mm. Hey, we don't like take that word generational, crumble it up and throw it out. Once you're in the league, it doesn't really matter anymore. Whether or not you're living up to that hype, whether or not Macklin Celebrini is passing you by, mm-hmm. we only need you to be the best that you can be, and that's it. Whatever those expectations are, I didn't set them, you didn't set them. Those are from the outside perspective, and so I think part of it is he needs to know that this entire rebuild, to the point you just made, and I'm going to hammer this, it's not on his shoulders. He didn't decide publicly that he's a generational talent, and he's had to wear that. And I think that's another part that he's really struggled with. So if Jeff Blashill can find a way to remove the shackles of that from a mental perspective, I think that's going to be critical.
So when you look at his background, the last several seasons being an assistant to John Cooper with Tampa Bay, which I think is great, is a great line in his resume. And then the head coaching experience in Detroit, where I think there was a lot of association with Mike Babcock and how maybe he didn't compare, which was a tough comparison, Frank. But, you know, I wonder, you know, which version is more fair to wonder, and which has helped coach or shape his coaching style more, the time succeeding Babcock in Detroit and maybe that connection with him, a successful coach, or the time he spent with John Cooper in Tampa?
I think the truth is probably both equally, because here's the thing, and a big reason why I don't think it's totally fair to look at Jeff Blashill's record and say, hey, why are we going after this guy? This doesn't make any sense. It doesn't work. He was handed a bleep sandwich in Detroit. With all due respect,
right?
This is a Red Wings team that had made the playoffs for 25 consecutive years and were absolutely due a rebuild. They were hanging on by a thread. And at some point, Ken Holland, their Hall of Fame general manager, pulled the plug and said, it's time. We need to redo this. And they made the playoffs the first year of his tenure, so he kept the streak alive. They were bounced in 5 games, I think coincidentally enough, by the Lightning. And after that, to say, oh, Jeff Blashill couldn't get that team back to the playoffs, like, they weren't even designed to be good. So I think it's a weird thing. So in this sport, I think seemingly more than any other, we tend to look at a coach's resume and we just want to delete the context. So, like, I'll give you another example, because the coaching cycle has been ongoing now. There's other guys in the league that can't get a job again despite coaching 2 teams that were rebuilding. So wait a second. You went to both teams. You didn't have any expectations to win. You didn't win. And all of a sudden you get a stamp on your forehead as a bad coach. How exactly does that work? So then Blashill, to your point, goes to Tampa and has an impressive run with inarguably one of the best coaches in the league. The teams had success. They won, and he's someone that really seemed to be universally respected for his contributions as a guy that didn't wallow, just jumped right back in and said, hey, I'm fired in Detroit after 7 seasons, 500 games. I'm not going to sit on my arse and watch the rest of the league. I'm going to go learn. I want to go learn in Tampa, and I want to learn from the best. And so he does that and now gets a second opportunity, and people, fans in Chicago, want to poo-poo him and say, oh, this guy's no good. They want to write him off before he even walks in the door. I don't really understand it.
Yeah, I don't think anyone wants to do that. I just think that you know, the problem that you have is kind of what happened in Detroit, right? The Blackhawks have completely, they're in a complete rebuild to the point where they've made 8 selections in the first round of the draft in the previous 3 seasons, 5 in the second round, another 8 in the third round. They got the third pick in this draft. Like the idea that, like, what's in it for him, I guess, is what I'm asking. You know, Jeff Laschel's coming into, you know, this is a team that's going to lose some games. And I don't think they're going to suddenly increase payroll. I think they've got a lot of young guys going to be on this roster.
I think the big difference between the two situations is that in Detroit, he was catching a team that was just on the way down and hadn't even bottomed out. In Chicago, he's catching this team on the exact opposite upswing.
Okay.
They're coming out of the rebuild. This is the exit of it. This last draft is the, I believe you could mark it down as the official end of the rebuild for the Hawks.
Hmm.
I don't think they're going to be picking in the top 5 again in 2026, even though that might be a great year to do it because that seems to be a transformational draft with some very, very special players. So that part is, just think about it like a bell curve. He's right on the upswing now and joining a team that has some special players, Vlasic, Renzel, Levshinov on the back end. You've got 3 bona fide top 6 defensemen that are locked in for the next decade. You've got Bedard if you can, you know, mess around with the Rubik's Cube and find a way to unlock him. And you've got Frank Nazar up front, plus a whole group, more than you could ever want, bottom 6 players that are each going to have their own little interesting role. They've got some Andrew Shaw-type guys. They've got a whole bunch of different character pieces. And they've got a goalie, a young goalie with pedigree. So I view this team as one just turning the corner, and you have to have the vision. You have to have the buy-in. The same thing that they were searching for as we had our conversation about David Carl in Denver,
right?
You have to want to be part of that. And I think when you look at this cycle and you look at 9, 10, 11 different jobs that were open, I would have had the Hawks in terms of an attractiveness in the top 3 for a lot of those reasons that we talked about.
Frank, you got a great handle on this situation. You're exactly right. And I think, I want to believe that they're going to take that vision into free agency and try to be as aggressive as possible because of the potential here. I hope that they're looking at free agency as a way that they could maybe land somebody who can help Connor Bedard reach that high ceiling that we're talking about. I wonder who that is. I want it to be Mitch Marner. I don't know if that's realistic or not. What do you think the market will be for Mitch Marner if he indeed plans to leave Toronto?
Well, I think he is planning to leave Toronto, and it's going to be very expensive. Like, we're talking 13, 13 and a half, upwards of $14 million on the open market a year. And so that is a massive deal. And you're also now having to think about this summer at the same time. And I know the Hawks have spent a lot of time internally thinking about what does the next long-term contract look like for Connor Bedard as well. So that's going to be an interesting sort of exercise as well. And maybe he says, you know, I'm going to hold off. I have no idea what his thought process is. Maybe he says, after a relatively disappointing second season, I'm just going to play out this year and see what happens. Maybe that works too. That said, I think if you're not able to get someone like Marner in the boat, that the best thing that the Hawks could do for themselves would be to continue to be judicious with term when they're going out to market. The best part about the Hawks summer last year, even though most of those guys didn't work out, is that they didn't really commit a lot of term. It was 1 or 2 year deals for the most part, stopgap guys, literal warm bodies to plug into your organization that could hold over the team from year to year. The problem is even those guys didn't provide enough support this year, and that's why you had such a disappointing season. I think where it would really help to be aggressive is certainly on the trade market. That's the place where you can make moves. The Hawks have some extra help on defense that they could trade from. I think a legitimate embarrassment of riches on the back end. And you've got your draft picks. So So they've got capital, they've got cap space, they've got flexibility. They just need to channel that aggression properly to make sure that they're finding players that fit their age scheme moving forward, that fill important voids in their build that they're missing right now.
Frank, it obviously takes a lot of different types of players that build up a team. You know, you talk about the blue liners. Obviously, you need skill players. Obviously, you need stronger players. They got a ton of speed among these young guys. I'm not sure they got a lot of size. How does that impact how you play the game? I mean, how would he want to play the game versus what they have to offer him?
Yeah, I think that's a great point, because that is a part that probably gets overlooked a lot, which is, okay, you've added this collection of skill and speed, and you've got all sorts of different attributes that these guys bring to the lineup. But a big thing that has been missing, and the Hawks do get pushed around, and they don't have the size to compete against certainly the big boys in the league, that's going to be an issue. I think they've done a pretty good job solidifying that with some size on their back end. The young guys that they do have coming up are all pretty big. And so that part is solved for already. I think they could definitely use more of that size and, frankly, some toughness up front. They need guys that are hungry to go to the net. They need guys that are going to be winning puck battles on the regular. That's their job. They need more of a lunch pail, hard hat mentality that I think has definitely been missing from this group. And I think they were frankly hoping that someone like a Tyler Bertuzzi last year could be part of that. And we saw that in fits and starts, but one of the big things missing from that team, not just from game to game, but period to period, has been consistency. And so that's part of it too. So I think that's a much needed and important element, and I wouldn't be surprised to see them tackle some of that this summer as well.
Quickly, before we let you go, Frank, we talk a lot about alignment in professional sports. Just curious, besides Tyler Bertuzzi, who played for Jeff Blashill, I don't know many other connections to Jeff Blashill in the Hawks organization. Does Kyle Davidson have any history with Blashill? I know Chris Chelios does, but he's an ambassador. He's not necessarily part of the operation. Is there any connection?
I don't believe so. I think they met for the first time as part of this interview process. And I think one of the big things that stood out and has always stood out with me when I've had conversations with have spent time in his orbit is that Jeff Blashill has a ton of presence. Like, you know, when he walks in the room, he commands that. And I think that's been missing a little bit. Certainly Anders Sorensen, who I think everyone respects and is staying on the bench as an assistant, he didn't have that. And Luke Richardson had it, but I think his demeanor was so laid back and quiet that I think it just made an environment that was too easy for those guys. And so the other fun thing about Jeff Blashill is that he's still a really relatively young guy. Like, it's probably lost on people that he's only 51 and that he has 7 full NHL seasons under his belt already at this point in time. By the time he was 48, that means something. So I think he can connect with these guys. I think he's obviously earned a connection and made that with Kyle Davidson enough to get the job. And I think this team is going to be in for an interesting ride.
So it's a good hire. Is that what you're telling us, Frank? I love it.
I think it is. Like, me personally, I wasn't overly enamored with this coaching class cycle. I think you had a couple guys at the top, and then I think the rest of it was beauties in the eye of the beholder. And I think the Hawks did the best that they could possibly do going out to get Jeff Blashill once they struck out on David Carl.
Great stuff. Thanks a ton, Frank. Really appreciate
Thanks
your
so
time.
Much, Frank.
Have a good weekend, guys. Happy Memorial Day.
That's Frank Saravelli. Absolutely fantastic.
Terrific insight.